This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least 3 times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, indeed. Welcome on into our Friday edition of Sports Talk, and happy 328 to all you Saints fans out there. Remembering, obviously, the Atlanta Falcons collapse in the Super Bowl, so you know, that's always a bright spot today.
It jogged my memory today. So the Super Bowl we just saw, the one in New Orleans, Kansas City Chiefs. We're going to be talking to Justin Reed later on in the show, and there's a clip of him on the sideline going into the second half, and he got the score wrong. He said the Patriots were down 27-3, and it was like that's why they didn't win. They didn't come back because he got the history wrong because it's 28-3. It's like. If you're going to be here now, you got to get that stuff right. That's important to Saints fans, that specific number.
Ironically, it's also Derek Carr's birthday.
I don't know about that. Yeah.
A sore spot for Saints fans in that fashion, it seems, today.
Yeah, the when you can't wish your quarterback a happy birthday without angry responses on social media, it's a weird time.
The NFL draft fastly coming to, upon us, approaching, and you know we're setting all these visits around the NFL, and I see a lot of fans getting worked up of, you know, the team being at certain pro days or interviewing like running backs like Ashton Jeanty, or they were at Syracuse today talking to a quarterback, and you know it's just a feeling out process. I don't think that there is too much should be gleaned into it, because we've talked to players before and be like, I didn't even talk to the Saints, and they drafted me.
Yeah, I mean, you're scouting. It's the job. That's what you do. You go out and you look at these guys because they could be the guy you draft. But, you know, it's this time of year, right? You want to make every molehill into the biggest mountain ever, and in reality, it's like they got to be doing something. Okay, which pro day are you going to go to? Okay, Kellen Moore's out at Ole Miss today, right? Yeah, there's some guys you can look at there. You know, the dinners they've been having, I think, are a little bit more interesting. And, you know, a lot of these dinners they've been having have been with running backs, because Ashton Jeanty mentioned that he and Joel Thomas went out for dinner. You have the Tennessee running back that I believe they went out to have a dinner with, Dylan Sampson, you know, and they were out at Ohio State's pro day, obviously, you know, Trevion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins. So I feel like if you're penciling in a position to this draft class
that's going to get selected,
you got to see a running back coming out of this class. Now, I don't know where you're going to get that running back. But I think that's what you're trying to figure out. It's like, hey, you know, Ashton Jeanty might be on the board. You gotta at least kick the tires and say, hey, if he's there, is this a guy that we're in on? Right? And if he's not, then you look down the board and say, hey, where would we be in on our running back? Is there someone we like at 40? Is there someone we like at 71, maybe 93? You know, and that's
rather a later round, not first.
I agree. I think third round is where you Saints have looked for running backs, and where they have been successful finding running backs, or at least finding running back. You know, Alvin Kamara worked out. The last third round pick hasn't really panned out quite as well. But that's what you're trying to figure out. You're not, you know, and I think that's, you know, oh, they went to Ole Miss, so they must be staring at Jackson Dart saying, we're taking them at number 9. I don't know, maybe, but there's a lot of players at that Ole Miss pro day that you might be looking at third round, fourth round, fifth round, sixth round. And that's why you're there, right? Like, you're all, like, people freaked out because they went to Miami. It's like, yeah, Cam Ward's there. But there's a lot of other players on that Miami roster that you could be considering. So there's a lot. Like, I feel like we always kind of home in on these top targets, the top picks and the top prospects. But a lot of times, like, you already know all about those guys. It's the guys down the line that you want to learn more about.
And I know in the past, Sean Payton has talked about going to certain pro days just to get intel on guys that you probably will face down the line, especially if somebody's in the division.
Yeah, that information doesn't just burn in a fire after you don't draft a guy, you know? And it's not even the guys you might play. It's, hey, 4 years down the line when these guys are free agents.
Yeah.
You know, Dylan Radins was a Senior Bowl guy. You don't think they got a good look at him in 2021 at the Senior Bowl? A lot of these Senior Bowl guys that they don't end up drafting, they have all that scouting information. They come back to him. So I think that is part of what you're doing.
Plenty of action around the wild world of sports. We had opening day in Major League Baseball yesterday. The LSU baseball team started their series against Mississippi State. Sweet 16 action going on. Nothing that you sports fans out there didn't have on the plate to at least tune into and watch. I was curious. It's like if you had to pick one, though, were you going with opening day or Sweet 16 action yesterday?
Well, you know, I'm still a little bitter about their UConn losing, so I did go with baseball. But, you know, and Charlie, you can probably weigh in here. Are you aware that we are in the Astros' home market and the Rangers' home market technically? Like, I got League Pass to watch MLB TV to watch the Red Sox because I don't get to watch the Red Sox games.
Right.
They're playing the Rangers, so it was blocked out. Like, Dallas is like an 8-hour drive from here. How could we possibly be considered in the home market of, I guess they're in Arlington, right?
Like, right.
How can we possibly be considered in the home market for the Astros, who are 5 hours away, and the Rangers, who are 8 hours away? I'm pretty sure the Florida teams are just as close. They're not blacked out. So what is it about Texas that apparently Louisiana has been lumped into? I think it's a Bally thing because they're both Bally teams. I would call it, it's malarkey. It's malarkey.
The MLB has the worst blackout rules.
It's crazy.
All professional sports. I agree 1,000%.
I wouldn't even know the mechanics of getting a Rangers home game on my TV.
It was part of the Bally Sports, I think, Southwest
right.
thing, which was what the Pelicans used to be on before they were on the Gulf Coast.
Is Bally Southwest still around?
I have no idea. I don't watch it because now the Pels are on Gulf.
Right.
The Gulf Coast. So I would have to subscribe to Bally specifically to get Rangers games.
Yeah, I think
it's crazy.
The Astros are on AT&T Southwest.
Okay.
It's like a different service. It's really weird. As you mentioned, the blackouts are so stupid. Like
we're not in Texas. We're not even close. Like in Connecticut, the Red Sox would be blocked out. And that's fine because that's pure Red Sox market. There's no baseball market here. They're making that up. Do people here really care about the Astros?
I would think the majority of folks, at least that I've run into, are Cubs fans here because of the back in the day of WGN being everywhere.
I would guess there's more fans of not those teams in Louisiana than
not
fans
Rangers
of those teams.
Or Astros.
Like if we're talking Lake Charles, that area,
there's plenty of Astros fans though too,
right? But I mean, it's an eight. There should be a limit. I was just so annoyed that I was like, I paid for this. I can't watch it because they're playing the Rangers. How dare you not subscribe? Anyway.
We got more Sweet 16 action coming up, and that is going to be on our sister station, The Bet, 92.9 FM and 1350 AM. We'll be catching up on that. Also tonight on WWL 870 AM, we've got the Pelicans taking on the Golden State Warriors, 6:30 pregame coverage, 7 o'clock tip-off. Meanwhile, on 105.3 FM, LSU baseball scheduled to play Game 2 against Mississippi State, 6 o'clock pregame coverage, a 6:30 first pitch. We'll definitely be keeping tabs on all the weather updates coming from Baton Rouge there. Coming up soon on this hour of Sports Talk, 4:35, new Saints safety Justin Reed will be joining us, helping us talk about all the new stuff going on with the black and gold and him coming back home to be with the Saints. Then in the 5 o'clock hour, a little draft talk. Sam Bruckhaus, former Tulane linebacker and Sumer Sports senior NFL analyst and data scientist, will help us break down some of the risers and fallers that have been on the draft board. Then, like I said, 6 o'clock, we're waiting on that LSU Mississippi State matchup. Game 2, Tigers coming back to take Game 1. A win this evening would give them the series, which they so much need. We'll be back talking about all things right after this, so stay tuned on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk as we get ready to talk to Saints safety Justin Reed coming up. Don't know if you guys saw the latest odds coming out from NFL win totals.
And I did.
The Saints, it seems awfully low to
five
me at 5.5.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. You look at, they won 5 games last year. And it went about as badly as it could have possibly gone.
Right, except for weeks one and two.
It's like it's tough to lose more than 12 games. Like, it's really difficult to lose more than 12 games. You have to be real, real bad. Like, you have to be trying to be bad to some extent. Like, you have to be bad and then get bad luck, you know? So I don't know. I wouldn't advise anyone bet that. As a Saints fan, like, you'd have to be miserable to be like, I'm going to bet the under. I'm going to root for this.
Right. I was like, you're looking at all the win totals, and I'm like, I'm like Bobby now. I'm going to call myself a homer because I'm slamming the over on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always going to slam the over at this time of the offseason because, here's the thing. Like, if things go well, right, if you get good luck, you're not losing 12 games. It's the bad luck that got you to that record in the first place, and you would have to hope there's a positive regression from a health perspective. So I don't know. It's at the end of the day, I understand why the Saints are there. Because they have done nothing to make people confident that they're going to be any better than they were last year, right? And if you're close to the project, you can say, like, well, with good health, they should be able to be better than they were last year. With a starting quarterback, they should be able to be better than they were last year. But again, and we talked about this, like, the odds are there for the betters. They're not a prediction. They are, hey, how are we going to make money on this, right? And so they're going to get a lot of people slamming that over, I think, because it's like, man, that's a low number.
It really, only one worse in the NFC was the New York Giants, I believe, at 4.5.
That makes sense. The two teams I end up watching the most. Yeah, I have a bad time.
I wonder if that changes now that they have Winston and Russ over
me
there.
Watching the Giants?
No, the win total.
It should change. I can't stop watching the Saints, but I can exercise some faculty on whether I watch the Giants. No, that Russ-Jameis situation, I've had, my family still watches the Giants, and they text me being like, what are they doing? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm as confused as you are, because my dad was like talking to me, he's like, oh, Jameis is the starter. I'm like, we'll see.
Right.
I didn't think they were signing in to be the starter. I was kind of surprised. Like, usually you'll sign your starter first. That's why it was a weird thing. If they had signed Russ and then signed Jameis, you'd be like, oh yeah, he's the backup. Because they signed Jameis first,
right?
You were like, oh, they must be signing him to be the starter. And apparently they're signing Russ to be the starter. But
maybe the Giants are trying to say, hey, pick us for Hard Knocks. We've got some entertaining content here.
Jeez. I don't know, man. I still think they're going to draft a quarterback. That's what's going to make it really weird, is when you have Russ, Jameis, and Jackson Shadur. Dart, Shadur, somebody.
Although the latest, I've seen two now mock drafts. I forget by who each one was, but have Shadur Sanders falling to number 9 with the Saints.
Well, then now we know that's going to happen. Yeah, I mean, that's official, right? The mock
Definitely,
drafts are
right.
always right. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, I think what it does tell me is that the Giants are not in the market to trade up to number 1. Because if you were, then you would be at least committed to, he's either going to start or he's going to be our backup. We are not going to spend any money. But I also think the Giants with Russ and Jameis and Daboll and Shane, it's like, okay, there's a scenario where all 4 of y'all are gone by next year. So we're not committing to anything.
Don't forget Tommy Cutlets.
Beyond this season. Yeah, Tommy DeVito. Let's get that thing done. Hey. But I think that's part of what it is when you have a GM and a head coach on as thin of ice as those two guys, you're not getting a multi-year deal at quarterback. You're getting, let's see how it goes. Because I think Russ is kind of washed. Like, I think Russ is Ryan Tannehill with Super Bowl rings. That's how I see Russell Wilson at this point in his career. And honestly, I don't know if his peak was all that much better. He was just on a really good team for the beginning of his career.
I'm interested to see, too, how that dynamic of the personalities of Russ and Jameis collide.
Yeah, I
think it's going to be some great entertainment value.
What I'll say for Jameis is I feel like I know who Jameis is. To me, Russ, his personality is completely manufactured.
Yeah.
It's all there for show. None of it's real. So I don't know what he's like in the locker room. I just remember that funny story about him doing like knee ups on a plane while everyone was trying to sleep.
Well, we're going to take a break. When we get back, we'll be talking to Saints safety Justin Reed right here on WWL. You can sound off our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line today, 504-260-1870. Let us know what you're up to this Friday. Coming back with more right after this. Stay tuned on WWL. We're back here on our Friday edition on WWL Saints Radio, and happy to welcome in one of the newest members of the Black and Gold, Saints safety Justin Reed, joining us here on WWL. Thanks so much for the time, Justin. How you been doing?
Oh, man, great. Just awesome. Appreciate you guys allowing me to come on board. Can't wait to talk to all of the Saints out there.
Definitely appreciate it, man. Me and my counterpart here, Jeff, were at your introductory press conference at the Saints facility earlier in the month. And just to feel that excitement from you about being back in Louisiana was really refreshing. Getting to soak in a little bit more. How are you and the family adjusting knowing you're going to be back in the boot?
I think that I have a little bit of an easier transition than most guys. I already know the area so well. I already have so much family there that the transition's pretty much streamlined. I already am closing all my residents in the next 3 days because I already knew exactly what areas to look at. And I'm just excited to get down there, get in the building, get in Coach Staley's system and start getting to work.
Yeah, Justin, I know you had your first kid recently. Congratulations, by the way. How's dad life treating you?
Sure, everyone who's a parent out there knows how those first couple of months are. not sleeping very much, but it is so rewarding to see her, especially now she's starting to have a little bit more reactions and facial expressions, smiling a lot more. So that's just so rewarding to see that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, just in general, you know, has it settled in yet that, you know, you're going to be back in front of family? Like, I know when we talked to you, a month or so ago, it was kind of fresh. You were saying, hey, it took a couple days to settle in. Like, have you kind of had time to reflect on what it's going to mean walking into the Superdome for the first time with a Saints jersey on? Obviously, you've played there before. In terms of, hey, I play for the Saints now. This is where I am.
Yeah, you know, thought about it a little bit, but I don't think that it'll really hit until we start getting closer to that first preseason game and regular season games where I actually get to see my name on the back of the jersey and walk out to that crowd and hear the chant and really just get to feel the electricity and the atmosphere. So really looking forward to it. Right now it's just all about the work ethic mentality, being the dog in the weight room, being the dog in the film study. So that way, you know, get guys at rally, we can all walk into the season extremely confident about what we're going to be able to go and do.
One thing about being back, though, Justin, I know you know the summers here well. Have you thought about Saints training camp?
Oh, yeah, I'm pretty familiar with it. I was already telling my girl, is like, hey, when you walk outside in the middle of July, and it's like it doesn't matter. You can't hide from the sun whether you're in the shade or not. It's going to be like you're wearing a fur coat out there. So salt tablets would be a must. Electrolytes would be a must. you just get right back into it and just, you know, power through it. But that's really what the dogs are made at, is in those conditions, because if you're able to fight through that, then the game will be easy.
Yeah, if you can survive 100% humidity, you can survive just about anything. You know, one thing that I appreciate in your press conference, you mentioned T5 a couple times, and people around here might not know that nickname for Tyrann Mathieu because we go by Honey Badger. I always appreciate how nicknames exist in different places. You played with him on the Texans. You didn't play with him on the Chiefs, but you obviously spent time on the Chiefs as well. What are your memories of playing with Tyrann as a rookie, and what are your kind of expectations of rejoining him this year?
Yeah, just his leadership qualities. He was a guy that knew a ton of football, was a savvy vet, was able to go beyond the playbook, and just had a really gifted feel for the game as far as feeling out past concepts, developing, being able to do things outside of the playbook, but still within the structure of the defense to go out and make some plays. And then quite possibly the most powerful thing is just his the way that he's able to speak, his public speaking skills as far as being a leader of men, and his pregame speeches get guys energized up and to buy into, feel like you're ready to run through a wall to do whatever needs to be done to go out there and win. Was really second to none.
You mentioned defensive coordinator Brandon Staley earlier, and just curious if you've gotten to speak with him much, and what do you know about his defense coming to New Orleans?
Yeah, that is dynamic. I was actually on football with Derwin a couple of days ago, and we talked a little bit about how he used Derwin, and then he's building the tape to show some ways how he's going to use me too. And it's going to be different, but it's going to be really exciting because he's going to, you know, try and put guys in positions to make some plays. So excited about getting into it, excited about actually being allowed to go out and talk football with them, because especially when you're on a new team, that's really all you really want to do is get down there and just get to it, you know.
Yeah, I think most people don't realize how many rules there are about, you know, actually like football conversations in the off season and stuff like that. It is kind of an interesting thing. But I am curious, you know, one thing that I've noticed about his defense is he likes to disguise a lot. And at the safety position, more so than maybe any other, you have a lot to do with that, whether you're disguising, you know, single high, whatever kind of coverage you're in. Yeah, how do you feel about that part of the game? Do you think that's a, you know, confusing a quarterback, showing a quarterback one look, and getting into another? What are your thoughts on that concept in general?
Yeah, I think that that's one of my strengths. I think one of my strengths is being able to hold looks and organize the defense and talk to my partner safety as well as other DBs and be able to get guys on the same page so that we can present a different look that the quarterback might not be prepared for. Because this game in this day and age, like, you're the best quarterbacks in the league, you know, your Patrick Mahomes, your Jalen Herberts, your Justin Herberts. All of these guys, if you tell them what coverage you're in, they're just going to pick you apart, right? So if you're able to cause some confusion and make them have some post-snap reads, that's really where all the turnovers that they play happen, because quarterbacks holding on to the ball a little bit longer. D-line, Cam Jordan, Chase Young, so might have another second to get home. And then quarterback might make some errant throws that you're able to turn into some interceptions. So disguising this league is critical, I think, to defensive success. So, it's good that that's one of the things we talked about when he was recruiting me, was that it will be a good fit in order to present these looks and not just give away the defenses to the quarterback and opposing teams.
Justin, recently oddsmakers put out the projected win totals for teams in the NFL. Saints coming in just at 5.5. Is that something you guys as players pay attention to, can use it as bulletin board material, or is that really overrated and something maybe that we just talk about in the media?
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't mean anything to anybody outside the locker room. Like, the locker room, we know what we're capable of, and, you know, I'm with the Saints now, and it's about the Saints, but just for example standpoint, the last 2 years with the Chiefs, we were picked to be the last in the division. We were picked not to go back to the Super Bowl, and we went to 3 straight Super Bowls. So, you know, all that is just, you know, you can call it whatever you want, hearsay. Some guys use it. If a guy does want to listen to media and he wants to use it as motivation, then great. Let that be your fuel for your fire to get you to go out there and play harder. But at the end of the day, it's on the men that's on the field. And whatever Vegas says, whatever these predictions are, don't mean anything. What matters is what the guys in the locker room and the coaching staff believe.
You know, you brought up the run with the Chiefs, the two championships you got back this year. I'm just curious, as you get some distance, some perspective from that, how do you view that run? And I think when you're in it, I'm sure it was hard to kind of get an idea of, like, we just accomplished something incredible. And obviously losing the Super Bowl, I think it would be really easy to lose perspective that, hey, you know, you're the first team to ever get back for the three-peat. You know, there's been other teams trying to get to a third Super Bowl. They didn't get there. You know, the Chiefs did. Obviously, it didn't go your way. But, you know, what is kind of your thoughts on that stretch now that you can kind of look back on it and assess it?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, that the end game is in mind. We know that every team at the beginning of the season wants to go to that championship. You know that that's the end game in mind, and that should be on your bulletin board or whatever it is. That's the standard. But the way that you get there is one game at a time, and it's putting out your best week in and week out. Taking no games off, no thinking that this game is already lost or already won, whatever it is, and expecting that every game will be tough. There were no easy games in any of those 3 years I was with the Chiefs, because you're playing against the NFL. It's the best of the best in the entire world. But if you approach it that way, and you approach it that you prepare to play your best ball week in and week out, it gives you the best chance to go out and do it. So you don't get hung up on mistakes. You have a process that you're always building towards. You want to be playing your best ball as you get to the postseason. You don't want to peak too soon. So it's okay to make mistakes during the season as long as every step is working towards that goal and you're focusing on it one game at a time.
Yeah, and just kind of going into that a little bit more, you know, Steve Spagnuolo here, he had a year as a defense coordinator, didn't go particularly well, but, you know, he's kind of reemerged as that guy over the last, you know, however many years, I've lost track, with the Chiefs. What is it about him that has allowed him to kind of turn that defense into such a dominant group? And, you know, what are kind of your takeaways in general of why that defense has been so effective in his span there?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things before we just mentioned earlier, and that's disguises. I mean, Coach Spags, we spend a ton of time on disguises and presenting looks to confuse quarterbacks so that it gave opportunities to go out and make plays. Like, we didn't sit in one coverage. We didn't sit in one look. We tried to make it as difficult as possible on the opposing team, and that allowed us to create some pressure. And then other than that, it's having cerebral players that can handle the playbook. Myself, Nick Bolton, Kim McDuffie's, whatever it is. Same type of guys that we'll have with the Saints, but having guys that can handle the playbook and don't make mental errors and give up explosives. So disguises, no explosive plays, and physical DBs, because every team wants to run the ball to the corner. But if your corners are cutting people in half, then there is no run game. The run game doesn't exist. And then you force them into a one-dimensional offense, and then your defensive line can go eat, and your DBs and linebackers can go eat in the coverage system too. So all of those pieces add up to the formula, and you just put them together, and then, you know, the magic just happens.
Justin, I know fans know you as a smart, tough guy that loves to lower the boom on the field, but what about away from the game of football? I know you recently just joined the ranks of the dad life, but what are some things that Justin Reed enjoys doing away from football?
Yeah, favorite hobbies. I like chess. I really like playing golf. I got the golf bug pretty bad. I'm actually out on the course right now because I just love to go play. And then, man, that's really I do that, and I do a little bit of real estate too. So those are the four phases of my life, man. I never get tired of it. And, like, I'm a guy that eats the same breakfast day in and day out, and I never get sick of it. And doing these four things, football, golf, chess, and real estate, I just never can get enough of it.
What's the goal score today?
If I'm shooting in the 80s, I got a good feeling about it.
All right, that's good.
I feel good about it.
Yeah, you know, I guess it, you know, in just in general, just one last question. You know, for fans who aren't familiar with your game, you know, obviously a lot of locals will know your brother from LSU. You obviously went out to Stanford, so didn't see as many of those games. What should someone walking into the Superdome expect to experience when they watch Justin Reed out on the field for the first time?
Probably that guy when you turn on, you know, 2005 Madden and everyone just loves using the hit stick all the time.
Yeah.
A guy like that, and a guy who I feed on physicality. I love physical games. I love punishing wide receivers. Maybe they do try and block me, or I want them to be thinking about me when they're running their routes to the middle of the field. And, you know, maybe that causes a drop pass or a tip ball that turns to an interception. But pride myself on that, and then also pride myself on being a big communicator on the field. No mental errors on my side of the field because, you know, we just don't make those mistakes. So having guys in the right position and then making the plays that just are put there for you, don't miss the layups.
Justin Reed, new Saints safety, definitely appreciate the time. Enjoy the golf game today, and definitely looking forward to seeing you at practices come off-season workouts. Congrats, my man.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you guys.
Thanks, Justin.
That was Justin Reed, Saints safety, joining us right here on WWL Saints Radio. Well, she'll take a break and come back with more right after this, so stay tuned on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. You can hear that interview of Justin Reed at WWL.com. If you missed it, also on the Odyssey app, you hit the rewind button. We mentioned the men's Sweet 16 in action. We also got ladies action this evening. The LSU women taking on NC State. That is a 6:30 tip-off. Currently at the half right now, guys, you've got Maryland has a 33-31 lead over South Carolina. If it were to be, you know, the scriptwriters in the NCAA women's basketball tournament have it their way, South Carolina would meet LSU. It would have to be the final game for the championship. Oh, what a matchup that would be.
That's how you want it. I don't know. Like, I feel like every team has that team they don't beat.
Yeah.
You know, like even when UConn was winning the titles the last 2 years, I was like, if they run into Creighton, I'm pretty sure they'll lose because Creighton just knows how to play them. There's just a confidence level. I feel like South Carolina is that team for LSU. I think LSU's going to win tonight. I mean, I know NC State's a 2 seed, but you know, I think they kind of sandbagged their way to a 3. You know, I think they're much better than a 3 seed.
Coming back with more sports talk after the top of the hour news. We'll be talking NFL draft. Sam Bruckhaus, former Tulane linebacker, also works for Sumer Sports, senior NFL analyst and data scientist, will join us then. So stay tuned for more of sports talk right after this on WWL. And welcome on into Sports Talk. And it's Friday, March 28th here. We're getting ready for LSU baseball taking on Mississippi State. No word about a weather delay yet, but we have seen that the women's softball team's matchup has been a delay. They were set for a 5:30 first pitch. We'll see if things can clear up in time for the Tigers and Bulldogs to go at it on the diamond in Alec Box Stadium. That is scheduled to be a 6:30 first pitch. Meanwhile, 6:30 over on 870 AM, we'll have pregame coverage of the Pelicans matchup against the Golden State Warriors this evening. That is a 7 o'clock tip-off in the Smoothie King Center. Not much talk about the Pels this week. It had a really odd schedule where they played Monday and then were off until Friday.
Yeah. Is the season still going on?
They got 9 games left, Jeff.
Oof. 9? Is there? If you like strike a deal with the NBA, can you like get those cut in half?
You know, we need the old video game simulate rest of season.
Yeah. You know who's not simulating the rest of the season? Taylor Jenkins. He's actually, I guess he would be simulating the rest of the season because the Grizzlies coach got fired. They're like the
Very
5
odd.
Seed in the West right now.
Right. Seems like something else is a brewing over there.
Yeah, it's something. It's got to be something beyond, well, they're just not playing very well, because they're playing reasonably well. I think they're 49 and 35, something like that. I think the NBA, of all sports, the NBA is the most notorious for coaches getting fired when things are going well, seemingly, versus not getting fired when things are going poorly, right? Like, I don't think Willie Green's going to get fired this year. And this is like the worst season we've seen the Pelicans have in 20 years. The Grizzlies went through this last year. They could have fired Taylor Jenkins last year if it was going so poorly. They chose not to. They waited until it started going well. And now they're firing him. So it's got to be something else. But like, you see that happen. Like Mike Budenholzer for the Bucks got fired right Midseason of, a handful of years back. And they went to the playoffs, and it was an interim coach in the playoffs. Dwayne Casey got fired after winning Coach of the Year with the Raptors. Like, it's just a weird dynamic in the NBA. Ime Udoka got fired after going to the finals with the Celtics. Obviously, there was some background information there that led to that. So there's got to be something. It's hard to believe that it was just like, we don't get along with this guy, when it's like, you could have just waited until the end of the season. It's almost here. There's only a couple weeks left. And you have playoff ambitions. Like, you're probably going to miss the play-in entirely, and you're just going to have an interim coach. It's just so strange.
Two coaches did get extensions today. That was over in the football ranks, though. In college, Deion Sanders landing a $54 million extension with Colorado, and then just saw that John Harbaugh reached an extension with the Baltimore Ravens through 2028. Yeah. Will the Baltimore ever live up to any of their high expectations?
Yeah, the Deion Sanders contract is kind of fascinating. So it's 5 years, $54 million, $10 million in the first two seasons, $11 million in the next two, $12 million in year five, when you would assume he's not even there because he's going to go coach somewhere else. It was reached with 3 years remaining on his existing five-year $29.5 million deal. But with these contracts, the number to look at is always the buyout, because, you know, Deion, like, this contract for the Colorado is like, we want to make sure that you stay here for at least another year, maybe hopefully two or three. So how do you do that? You make it so he's going to have to pay you a pretty hefty chunk of change if he decides to go somewhere else. So what's the buyout? If Deion Sanders takes another job in the NFL or another NCAA team, his buyout is $12 million if he terminates the deal on or before December 31st, 2025. So that would be the end of this year. $10 million in 2026. $6 million in 2027, $4 million in 2028, and $3 million in 2029. So, you know, he's making a lot of money on this deal, but it kind of locks him in where, hey, if I want to leave, if I get, you know, a godfather offer from an NFL team after the 2025 season, he's going to be on the hook for $10 million. back to Colorado. So right. it's kind of an interesting thing. Whereas like some coaches, it's the opposite way. Like Ed O's contract, it was like they had to pay him to leave. You know, I don't think Deion's going to get fired anytime soon. So it's kind of a different scenario.
Checking in on our Oakwood Heart Jewelers talk and text line, Jeff. Somebody that is interested in what the Pelicans are doing, Jimmy in Gretna. What you got for us this Friday, man?
Hey, man. Yeah, I'm bummed about the rain tomorrow. The Irish Channel. You know, it seems like this St. Patrick stuff lasts for like a month.
Yeah,
got canceled. But hey, put a quick spotlight. Go out to NOLA Gold Rugby. I went to a game recently, and I actually had a good time there. Tomorrow night, looks like the rain should be clear for that. And yes, there's an Irish parade Sunday in Gretna for anybody looking for some free groceries at noon. But let me say this about the Pelicans. Let me say this real quick, guys. Pelicans tonight, Golden State. Typically, I call you guys up saying it's a $1 ticket, and it has been this year. Steph Curry tonight is in the house. He's coming back from an injury. It looks like he's going to play. Tickets are like $40 just to get in the door. So,
wow.
Listen, at this point, it's going to be a lot of people from Algiers and West Wego wearing Curry jerseys and all that. I get that. And there's not much to celebrate. I get that. And really, do we really want to win at this point? Maybe not. But we're kind of in purgatory, though, now, guys, because we're probably not going to get the number one overall pick, get Cooper Flagg, this and that. We're probably going to be around 5, 6, 7. Is there anybody that you're seeing in the tournament or otherwise that piques your interest as a possibility if we're around 5, 6, or 7 picking in the NBA draft?
Thanks, Jimmy. And, yeah, that thing with the Pels, too, right now, for this evening at least, you've got no Zion Williamson, no C.J. McCollum in action either.
Yeah, the Pelicans aren't going to win that game. You know, and the thing is, like you said,
do they really want to right now?
Probably not, and I'm okay with it. But the thing is, like, Warriors fans travel, and I will tell you why. Because a $40 ticket to a Warriors game doesn't exist. You can't sit in the nosebleeds for $40, right? So I think to a certain extent, it's probably cheaper to get a plane ticket and a hotel room and fly to New Orleans for a Warriors game than it is to go to, I don't know the name of their arena, but to go watch.
It used to be Oracle Arena, not anymore.
I don't think it's Oracle anymore.
No,
but either way, like it's probably about the same at the end of the day. And you get to do New Orleans at the same time. And that's why, like, a lot of these, like, when the Celtics come down here, like, it's mostly Celtics fans in the season like this, because it's the best deal they're going to get to watch their team in person. And, yeah, and then you get a trip out of the deal. So that's like, I remember vividly, this was when Kevin Durant was on the Warriors. I was at a game, and there was a fast break dunk. It was a close game, and Durant had a fast break dunk, and the cheer in the building, you would think you were in Oakland. I think they were still playing in Oakland at that point. So that's kind of what it is. But I don't know. I have a hard time nailing down this draft class, in part because I haven't gotten to watch any of these Rutgers games, because Rutgers was terrible,
right?
But they happen to have two
players in the top 10, right?
Two lottery picks in Dylan Harper and who was the other guy? I've lost
Ace
it.
Bailey.
Ace Bailey, right. So, like, you're going to have two of the top picks that I haven't watched one time because no one's ever watching any Rutgers game. So it's tough. VJ Edgecombe, I think, is an interesting guy, but 6'5". I guess the question is, what do the Pelicans need? And what the Pelicans need is Cooper Flagg. Like, I don't think, I have a hard time seeing the Wizards get passing off of that, but I did also watch the Wizards allow 160 points in regulation last night, so they're not putting up too much of a fight about just about anything right now. But I don't know. I'm kind of fascinated to see if, like, Cooper Flagg tries to play the, hey, I could go back to Duke game, don't draft me, Washington.
There's been some of those rumors flowing out there that he's going to return to school. We'll see.
Even the sprained ankle probably didn't do that idea any favors. But with NIL now, like, he's probably making enough money that you could justify, like, hey, this is such a bad situation. But the problem is the number one team in the draft is always going to be a bad situation, you know? It's not like the only time, like, this, when the Celtics got the number one pick and drafted Jason Tatum after, you know, going to the Eastern Conference Finals, like, that happens once in a blue moon, but you're almost always going to go to a Washington or a Charlotte. So I don't know, but I have a hard time finding anything in this draft class that's going to move the needle for the Pelicans.
You mentioned Rutgers, and that just so happens to be where this particular mock drafts has the Saints going with Ace Bailey, the shooting guard, small forward from there. We'll have to obviously wait and see what happens and how the ping pong balls, lottery balls, fall for the Saints, for the Pelicans. Sorry.
Yeah, you said Pelicans a couple, or Saints a couple times. Yeah, we'll see.
I got Saints draft on my mind because that's our next guest.
Yeah, I need to dive in a little bit more. I don't have enough insight on this yet.
Let us take a break right now. When we get back, we'll get into the NFL draft with former Tulane linebacker Sam Bruckhouse right here on WWL. Stay tuned. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Our NFL draft countdown continues. We're just 27 days away from round one kicking off. And this year, the event will be held in Green Bay to help us talk about how the big boards are looking right now and also talking some Saints black and gold action. Sam Bruckhouse, who is a Sumer Sports senior NFL analyst and data scientist, also a former Tulane linebacker. Sam, thanks so much for joining us today. How's it going? Guess we lost Sam already here on the line. Great, great start to this one.
An inauspicious beginning to this interview. I think we should be able to get him back, but we'll find out. Did you see this thing on? I want to ask Sam about this when we get him back. Did you see this thing on Tet McMillan? It was like this kind of like weird voyeur video about how he doesn't study film.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's not a good look. Not exactly a gas mask situation.
I got you. We got Sam back on the line.
We got Sam. How you doing, Sam? You back?
You can ask him about that right off the bat here. How's it going, Sam?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Hey, guys, I was listening in to y'all's earlier segment about the Grizzlies. I was just as shocked, but I was teaching a class at Tulane, actually, yesterday. I'm in for the book fair.
Nice.
And I was looking at their net rating, and they're under teams like the Timberwolves, the Clippers, the Warriors, the Rockets. And so maybe that projection went into the decision that despite having a better record than a lot of those teams, when it comes to the analytics, they're below them.
Yeah, but why not just ride it out to the end of the season if it's performance? That's the part that doesn't make sense. Like, yeah, you could have done the same thing and not kind of thrown the rest of your season into the wood chipper. You there, Sam?
We got to get Sam a cell phone deal.
Oh no, what's happening? Is he okay? Maybe
the storms are rolling in and it's affecting service.
Maybe that's we'll find out. I think it might be an internet thing. My internet's down, so it could be us. Maybe we are destroying the connection.
Ooh, us?
No, we'll see, but. Yeah, so back to the Tet
McMillan stuff. Yeah,
it's kind of like this impromptu video of him kind of just sitting. It looks like the Arizona dining hall talking about how he doesn't really watch football and he doesn't really watch film. And it's not a great look. Sam, you there?
Yeah, I think I'm back now. Can you hear me now?
are you just driving through tunnels persistently? Is that what's going on?
No, I'm sitting in a hotel right now, so hopefully I guess the Wi-Fi will get figured out or something. But glad to be with y'all.
Gotcha. We'll get it going. Sam, I'm just curious. Did you see this Tet McMillan video that's been circulating of him kind of saying he doesn't watch film and he watches it with his position group and that's about it? I'm just curious if you have an opinion on is that something that you think should sway opinions of teams at this point in the process when stuff like that comes to light?
Man, it's so tough because, number one, you look at the numbers and really no one is good at drafting. I work for a former Dirty Bird, Thomas Dimitroff, who was going up against the Saints years and years, and him and Mickey Loomis also are two of the better drafters, but they've been at it for a long time and they've been able to prove their philosophy over time, and that's why they were both so long tenured. Not everybody gets that luxury, and so it's difficult to pick up the secret sauce. Obviously, within a team, you want to know that everyone is trying their hardest, but when it comes down to it, I think Tet McMillan put his resume out there on the field. Maybe you train him up how to manage the media a little bit more, but it's difficult for me to say that he should just tank in April after he played multiple years at Arizona, was very productive there.
Yeah, it is a weird time because we go from an entire year of watching the film and the film's the only thing that matters. Then you graduate to, these numbers are the only thing that matters, right? Suddenly, he runs that four, does this thing that he's never going to do in a game, but he does it really well. So we get really excited and, Will Campbell's arms measure at 32 5/8, but then wait, actually, they got the tape measure wrong. It's 33 inches. Suddenly he's a tackle again. I don't know. I guess, how much, when you look at this process, Do teams, do we take too much time looking at these measurables and not enough time going back and watching the tape? How do you kind of feel the process goes in that sense?
So I hate being the wet blanket, man. In fact, I've been thinking about it basically since the combine of why I kind of have to poo-poo some of these measurements and stuff like that. But like you mentioned, you know, talking about the 40 times of all these guys, it came up with Xavier Restrepo, slot receiver out of Miami this week. Like, we have software that can pick up how fast players are running
right.
just from his tape. And his tape has been there since, like, December at the least, at least since November, and he's been a kind of older guy, so we have multiple years of tape on him. So when a number is strange, we can go back and look at him actually playing, and obviously we want to ask a question about the hamstring. Maybe that comes up in a draft meeting. That's probably salient information. But like you said, particularly with regards to LSU's Will Campbell, I was talking to his trainer, Duke Manyweather, on our Sumer Sports Show podcast, which you can get wherever you listen to podcasts. And he immediately, no questions asked, put, this dude's a tackle. He produced at the highest level from the time he was an 18-year-old at LSU playing against the best edge rushers in the nation at tackle for 4 years or 3 years. And so it's really kind of baffling when we start talking about quarters of inches of arm length being able to inhibit someone from playing a position they played for a long time and produced at for a very long time as well.
Sam, when you're looking where the Saints are in the NFL draft, the first round, having the ninth overall selection, man, there have been mock drafts all over the place. Early on, I felt like Tet McMillan was a popular pick, and lately now I feel like the last two I've seen have Shedeur Sanders making it all the way down to the Saints at pick number 9. Mel Kiper Jr.'s mock draft had them selecting Jackson Dart. Just your overall feel of what you think will be on the board for the Saints at number 9 and where you think the black and gold should go.
So I've done two mock drafts now. The first one I tried to make a little bit more realistic of what probably actually will happen. The second one I tried to think, what if pressure starts bending some of these teams who really want to get a quarterback? And my true belief as it sits right now is that you're going to have to go up and get a quarterback really quickly because the quarterback pressure in this league is so high, and there's really two teams at the top in the Titans and the Browns who kind of hold the keys and may be willing to trade back. It seems like in recent days the Titans have really fallen in love with Cam Ward. At least that's what reports are saying. But I think in order to go ahead and go get a quarterback, you're going to have to get in that top 3 to 5 range, or else you'll have to reach on a Jackson Dart, a la the Falcons, you know, pulling Michael Penix all the way up to a first round pick. So I think you probably will have to spend assets to get into the top 5 picks to get a quarterback. There's the answer for that right now. In terms of the Saints, there's a lot of needs. I think Tet McMillan would fill a need. We saw the state in which the Saints wide receivers were in midseason after some injuries. They do have two guys that are revered in the community of, you know, really being productive guys, Olave and Shaheed, but injuries have saddled them. And I just think you gotta look at rebuilding that defense. Right now, I think Will Johnson may be a pick. That's my pick currently of who I think they may go with if the cards fall with quarterbacks going early. I think that's an excellent cornerback who could fit well into new defensive coordinator Brandon Staley's scheme.
Yeah, you know, this draft reminds me a lot of 2016, and, you know, not only because that was the year the Titans did trade out from number 1 overall, but even the quarterbacks in general, you know, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, kind of feels like there's some polarization in within those two quarterbacks, the way that I feel like there's some polarization on the top two this year, whether you want to say it's Jackson Dart or Shedeur Sanders or whatever. I feel like we all agree Cam Ward is that guy and the guy behind him. You know, so what do you what would you be doing if you were the Giants right now, like sitting there with 2 1-year deals and a coach that feels like he's on the hot seat, a GM that feels like he's on the hot seat? Would you be going up and getting one of these quarterbacks, or would you be sitting back and saying, yeah, I'll wait till next year?
So this is where analyst Sammy B disagrees with kind of the political Sammy B a little bit, because analyst me wants to say, if you don't got the quarterback situation figured out, then you are in hot water. And they've already kind of taken two shots, Jameis Winston, Russell Wilson, two players that have shown that they can be productive in this league, but for whatever reason have fallen out with really impressive coaches. You think about Jameis and Russell, both of those guys have fallen out with Sean Payton, Pete Carroll, Mike Tomlin. Like, these aren't Joe Schmo coaches. These are guys who are Coach of the Year candidates every year. And so there's obviously probably limited upside with those guys. We know who they are. I think you just go ahead and take the shot on a quarterback at three and maybe consider trading up if you really like Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders. But they're also in a good position now, having two veteran quarterbacks, to probably wait if they do like a guy like a Jackson Dart or a Dylan Gabriel or a Jalen Milroe, who they can probably get in the second or third round. They're probably positioned to do that. But I think if I'm them, you know, a quarterback is probably analytically the best place for them to go day one or day two. Now, politically, I don't know about that. Obviously, you have it set up with the veterans. You can probably go in and feel okay. And a little known fact about them was their defensive front was actually quite good last year. We're talking about Bobby Okereke, Dexter Lawrence, Brian Burns, Kevon Thibodeau. These are all big names, and they were one of the better teams in terms of getting pressure on the quarterback last year. With a couple of tweaks, they may be able to have a good defense. So I think the options need to be either go with Travis Hunter at three if you can't get pick one and two a quarterback, and quarterbacks do go one and two, or figure out some way to address a third quarterback into the quarterback room.
One player that's been, I feel like, all over mock draft boards and really curious to see where Ashton Jeanty ends up out of Boise State. A lot of folks, you know, had connections with him to the black and gold just because, obviously, the head coach, Kellen Moore, was a Boise State guy as well. There's a little bit of a need there running back. I hope this team doesn't go that direction, though, in the first round of this draft at least. But just curious for you, where do you think a guy like Jeanty slots in the first round?
Yeah, we had a great conversation on our SiriusXM Sumer Sports show, which I think may be finishing up right now, but you can get it on demand on the SiriusXM app. And we were discussing today when we were recording really what the value of a guy who has the perfect resume, which Ashton Jeanty pretty much does have. And I got to give you kudos for picking up the 2016 draft, because that was also the draft that Zeke Elliott was in, who had a pretty perfect right. resume as well. Here's the items that are really key from the process analytical perspective. The first is, if you are drafting a running back in the first round, he will be paid as one of the best running backs in the league. That's just the way the market works. He needs to be a guy who immediately is in Pro Bowl conversations, and that's very hard to hit on in the draft, and it causes a lot of problems, and that's why a lot of teams wait to the second or third rounds. The second item is you probably only got the first 3 to 5 years to get maximum effort at them. We saw the Steelers move on from Najee Harris. The subset of guys who have been able to contribute long-term is very limited. You can only think of like maybe 3 or 4 in the league right now: Kamara, Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry. After that, it starts getting a little questionable of those older guys. And so those two things make the running back position so uncertain that I personally wouldn't feel really good drafting especially anyone not named Ashton Jeanty and including Ashton Jeanty in the first round as an analyst.
Yeah, fun fact, when the Titans traded that pick in 2016, one of the picks they got was number 45 overall, which they used on the pride of Alabama, Derrick Henry. So anyway, just saying, if you want to keep going back to that 2016 draft. But, you know, I do find it interesting. A lot of people have said, like, hey, Kellen Moore found out firsthand that if you have one of those superstar running backs, you can go win a Super Bowl. And my response to that is usually, well, Kellen Moore found out firsthand if you go sign the superstar running back from the team that drafted him and failed him for 5 years, 6 years. Yeah, that's a much better scenario. The Bucks found that out too with Leonard Fournette. So, and I kind of feel like that my philosophy on running backs is like, if you are a playoff team plus star running back, you can elevate to a Super Bowl team. If you are a bad team plus superstar running back, you are just a bad team with a superstar running back.
Yeah, and I think what Kellen Moore probably learned the most is that it's great to have two all-pro tackles on your team.
Yes,
and so I think his evaluation of the young tackles, Talese Fuaga and Trevor Penning, is going to really direct the way that the Saints go in this draft, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, and how he wants to operate this offense as well.
Back with that tackle conversation, curious how you feel with the rankings. I've seen some folks believe that Armon Membu is actually a better prospect than Will Campbell from LSU, and just curious your thoughts on that one.
So, again, we had Duke Manyweather on. We asked him all these questions. I personally love the production of Campbell, and this is just a guy that you can put on an island. A lot of dropbacks from Jaden Daniels and Garrett Nussmeier in that offense. A lot of him having to protect for a long time. I personally think that you can probably address the left tackle position by getting Will Campbell. Membu on the other side is probably a true right tackle, a guy that you'd be looking at, an athletic profile that looks like a Penei Sewell or something like that. I'm a little less questionable, I'm a little more questionable of his production than Will Campbell. So currently I think Campbell's probably good. A guy who's gotten lost in the shuffle, though, Kelvin Banks. He played for Steve Sarkisian, and a lot of people think that Steve Sarkisian out there at Texas, people forget that he was the offense coordinator of the Atlanta Falcons. That's an NFL pro-style system that he's running out there at Texas. And I think Kelvin Banks is a guy who's kind of fell a little bit, but I feel like he has some juice at left tackle as well, having played at a school like Texas in the SEC. I feel like he may be a guy who ends up sneaking into kind of the top 15 as well.
Top tier info from you, Sam. Appreciate it. What can folks find out at Sumer Sports right now they should go check out?
Yeah, so check out our podcast, the Draft FM podcast, the Sumer Sports Show. Two podcasts I'm on. You can catch them wherever podcasts are. And also check out sumersports.com. A lot of great information that we're writing every week.
Appreciate it, Sam. Be talking to you soon. Have a great one, man.
Thanks for bearing with me on the phone troubles.
No worries. Thanks, at all. Sam Brookhouse, former Tulane linebacker, also Sumer Sports senior NFL analyst and data scientist, joining us right there. We'll talk to him more before the NFL draft kicks off. Right now, we're going to take a break, though. Be back with more sports talk right after this on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Want to tell every you college basketball fans out there, we are your home for March Madness. If you can't get enough of the men's NCAA basketball tournament, you can catch all the Sweet 16 action on our sister station, the Bet 92.9 FM and 1350 AM. Just look for the Bet New Orleans also on the Odyssey app. Looking at the games in action tonight over there, Ole Miss taking on Michigan State, Kentucky and Tennessee, Michigan versus Auburn, and Purdue against Houston. In the women's Sweet 16 action, we've got the women's of LSU going to be in action against NC State this evening. That's a 6:30 tip-off that you can watch on ESPN. Right now, I'm checking out here South Carolina and Maryland. Oh, those Gamecocks up 64-60, 33 seconds left in that matchup.
They're going to win.
They just find a way to get it done.
Don't bet against South Carolina. Right? Yeah, I mean, there's not a ton of upsets in with the women's tournament. Right? Like you kind of can – it's like that's why filling out a bracket is kind of useless, because it's almost always chalk. Like LSU upsetting NC State on a 3-2 line is like the closest you'll get to like an upset.
Yeah.
Like you rarely see, you know, 8-9s winning. South Carolina, they're going to be one seeds in the Final Four. You know, that's where you're at.
Yeah, looking at the rest of the women's in Sweet 16 action today, it was number 2 Duke taking down number 3 UNC 47-38. Like you mentioned, LSU number 3 taking on number 2 NC State. And then the late game this evening, number 1 UCLA against the 5 seed in Mississippi, Ole Miss.
Right, like a 5 beating a 4 is the upset of this tournament to this point.
We're taking a break here on Sports Talk, returning with more right after this. We'll keep an eye on the LSU baseball game, see if there's any weather updates on that. Coming back with more right after this on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. We have gotten word from the LSU baseball folks. They are currently in a delay due to inclement weather in the area, and it will not be a 6:30 first pitch. Further updates will come once a new first pitch time is determined over in Alec Box Stadium. Curious to see when that weather will clear out. Coach Jay Johnson did mention last night that they were expecting, if things were to be moved with this game, they weren't going to bump them up in time. It would be later on in the evening. So they do expect, I think, this whatever sell is going on in Baton Rouge right now to clear out eventually for this game to get started. Then they definitely want to play tonight because whatever the SEC rules, a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series, you can't carry over into Sunday.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was a bit odd. And even Jay Johnson mentioned that's got to change.
Build a roof. Build a roof. Build. I'm sorry.
Taking a break for top of the hour news here on WWL. We'll be right back with more right after this. So stay tuned on WWL.